The last day of the month is here already, and as we've done the end of every month on Current State, we review the top stories of the month, and we join Angela Whitrock, late of M Live. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Mark.
And Elaine Kolhanek of LSJ Media also joins us this morning to talk about everything that we stirred up in May. How are you, Elaine?
Good morning. Good.
I would like to start with just with your take on the most memorable or most impactful story from the month we're wrapping up. Angela?
I would go with the city budget. I mean, once again, the city faced a pretty large deficit. And once again, it was balanced without a ton of pain or obvious pain for city residents, unless you count the 130 fees that will be increased or added. So, you know, pocketbooks galore again.
That is a ton of fees.
That is
130.
Yes, either new or increased fees. So everything from buying a burial plot in the city to parking tickets is going up.
Wow. Elaine Kolhanek, what about you? I know you followed the city budget too, but
Well, I actually, that would have been on my list as well, and not just for what the city did, but for what it didn't do, because I think that the work of the financial health team in making long-term recommendations was vital, and I've met some of the people who were on that committee. They've been to our editorial board meetings, and it's really a stellar collection of business leaders in this community, and to have devoted all their time to that. Now, I know we've also talked to the mayor about, you know, why he made the choices he made and that those are not things that can be done quickly. And I, you know, I do hope that that work gets the attention that it deserves.
Did this lead to some tension between Dave Hollister and Mayor Bernero? I mean,
That's the impression I've had as well. Yeah.
But I guess things maybe have been smoothed over.
Possibly, I would. You know, they both can be quite diplomatic when they need to be. So, but I think there was some initial friction, and everyone has seen the fuss that's been made about the possibility of selling off the DIA assets in order to resolve Detroit's problems.
Sure.
You know, when Lansing's sort of maybe equivalent of that would be the Board of Water and Light, and when that financial health team just mentioned that things such as assets like the BWL might be, you know, included in their discussions, there was an immediate no from above. And I don't have a position on whether we should get rid of, you know, sell the BWL or not. I don't know if that's an answer to anything. But the point is, I think we need to look bigger than what we're looking. I mean, we can nickel and dime people with 130 fee increases and, you know, try to hide $5 million in their increased BWL rates, but they're still going to be paying one way or the other. And unless something more dramatic gets done about the city's structural deficit, that's just going to continue indefinitely.
Barring the highly unforeseen, we know Michigan's next Democratic candidate for governor will be Mark Schauer. The Governor Snyder's picked up a bunch of detractors recently, but admittedly, early polls suggest it may not be a walk for the Democrat by any means. What do you make of a Schauer candidacy, and what do you make of his chances, assuming Governor Snyder runs again, Angela?
Well, I think it'll be fascinating to see how the Dems pull together around this. It's, you know, in an election like this where it's so polarized, it's got to be mobilizing the base against mobilizing the base. And that was certainly a problem in the last go around, getting Dems out to the polls. A lot of Dems voted for Snyder last time around. So, you know, really, it's going to be a challenge, I think, at least initially, looking at the message for Schauer to really, you know, go on the attack. He's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
He's so compassionate and so, you know, he does all the nice things. And I think he's going to have to find a way to give a little edge to his message to, you know, show that he's tough in a different way. He's, you know, trying to set himself up as like the working class fighter. You know, he's the guy who got maced in the face at right to work protests. But there's got to be a way, I think, for him to really make his case to Dems and to anybody on the fence, or maybe anybody who voted for Snyder who feels a little betrayed or, you know, undersold, that he's, you know, he's different. He's more like like working class Michiganders. I think that's going to be the challenge, is finding a way to really hammer that message home and get people excited about voting for him, not necessarily just against Snyder.
We have two really intelligent, really serious candidates for governor this
time around.
It's
a very cerebral election, yes.
Without a doubt. Elaine, anything to add?
Well, I think, you know, Schauer's biggest strength may be that the Democrats have coalesced around him 18 months before the actual election.
Sure.
They have made a group decision that they will spend not one thin dime on a primary for governor.
Again, not like last time.
They are going to really, you know, put some effort into this. And I, you know, I suspect how much money everybody has to spend is going to be a very significant factor, because, you know, Governor Snyder will have plenty. I also think that, you know, Mr. Schauer, he is a very intellectual, very bright politician, and I think, you know, probably has, you know, very good character for the challenge ahead. But he has a disadvantage in name recognition. He's not holding an office currently. He lost his last election. There are some people, because he was, you know, minority leader of the Senate, but it's been a while, don't really realize the extent of his state political experience. And
that begs the question, how important was it to resolve this early, just as a factor of getting his name out there and without cluttering it up with some other candidate in the next 18 months? Huge.
I think. And they also did it in such a coordinated way. I mean, the beginning of the month, the Democratic Governors Association polling says Snyder's essentially tied with Schauer in their polling results. And then the next day, I think John Austin said, "I'm not going to run." And then the day after that, Virge Bonero said, "I'm not going to run." And everybody says, "I'm not running and I'm supporting Schauer." And it went on for like a week with people. And, you know, then they closed the month with Schauer officially making his announcement. So they obviously, you know, that was a group effort. They've made their decision and they're trying to make it successful.
It seems like maybe, too, you see a little bit of the Dems learning from the mistakes of the last election cycle, where, you know, it turned out that John Cherry raised more money than anybody, but he didn't even officially get into the race. You know, so the guy who maybe stood the best chance of winning what was pretty much an unwinnable election for the Dems was out before it even started. And I think, like Elaine said, it's really important that the Dems got behind one guy this early out.
Four Democratic state senators, one of them, East Lansing's Gretchen Whitmer, have introduced bills advancing recognition of same-sex marriages. I'll quickly run through what these four measures would do. One would allow voters to repeal the constitutional amendment banning recognition of same-gender relationships by the government. One would call on the federal government to repeal DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. Senator Whitmer's would repeal limitations on same-sex relationships prior to 2004, when the state constitutional amendment was enacted. And the fourth would recognize such marriages that have happened in states where they're already legally recognized, and would recognize them here in Michigan. I've got to get your response to this. Angela?
Well, they're going nowhere. I mean, they're obviously important social issues, I think, for a majority of people in the state, but, you know, just looking at the tenor of the composition of the state Senate and the state House, I mean, these bills will probably be lucky to even get a hearing or get assigned to a committee where they'll have a chance at getting a hearing. And I think what you're seeing more of, actually, is local elected officials, you know, this week and the week over the last month, really, stepping it up and trying to find ways to circumvent the state legislature, because they know that, you know, as interesting and compelling as important as legislation like this is for a lot of people, it's just not going to get a hearing. It's not going to get a vote. And even if it does get a vote, it's not going to pass. So instead, you see, you know, folks like Curtis Hertel, the Register of Deeds, finding ways to recognize same-sex relationships through property rights and property filings.
Right.
You see the ordinances that are going to be brought up in Meridian Township and other surrounding areas to essentially protect the rights of LGBT residents in ways that currently aren't allowed. I think that's what we'll see more of happening, absent any even motivation or any desire from the state legislature to look at this issue again.
Elaine, care
to change that constitutional amendment? I think what happens is that both houses would have to have a 2/3 majority, and then it would go on to a ballot, and people would have to vote.
Yes, that would lead to a popular vote.
Yeah. So, I think I tend to agree that the legislature, the Democrats, don't have enough pull in the legislature perhaps yet to make that happen. But I think there's there may be a possibility of an initiated ballot proposal that bypasses the legislature, I think, over time. I don't know, that definitely won't happen in 2014, but it may be 2016 or maybe somewhere after that. I think that you're seeing across the country a turning of opinion on this issue
Without a doubt, rapidly
than anybody would have expected. And even earlier this week, I read an editorial that was in the Dallas Morning News, where they were calling upon the shareholders of ExxonMobil to support a policy in favor of equal rights for gay employees and, you know, equal benefits for gay employees. When can you imagine something like that, seeing a newspaper editorial calling on a company? And obviously the reason, it's an economic issue in the state of Texas. A lot of people work for ExxonMobil, and a lot of people who want those benefits can't get them at ExxonMobil.
One of the reasons I had to pursue this, it did just happen, and it happened in the month of May, was to try to contrast the incredible momentum that these issues have right now.
Yeah. I'm
not sure I've seen attitudes toward an issue change so dramatically, so quickly in my life. It's really astounding. But contrasting that momentum with the legislative mm-hmm. realities, I had to find out how much could the local initiatives get done, do you think?
Well, what they would do is essentially expand the rights that are available to everyone, to you and I, essentially, to anyone who identifies as LGBT. Right now, outside of East Lansing, basically, and Lansing, if you're gay, you can be fired. There's no protection.
And once again, it's Meridian Township that's looking at
this? It's Meridian, Delhi, and Delta, I think.
Okay.
And, what they would do is they would offer the protections that, you know, statewide, it would be something you would have to amend the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act to do. What they're doing is mocking up ordinances that are very similar to East Lansing's, which was passed in the 70s, expanding that locally instead.
Elaine Kulhanic, give us your most overlooked story of May. What do you think?
I actually wonder about the Consumers Mutual Insurance, which is the co-op that's being created. It's going to be based in East Lansing.
Dennis Litos. Yeah,
and
he
that
was on
is,
the show.
I started with a grant under the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
And I believe that a bunch of Michigan counties are involved in it that had been running their health programs for low-income people that will be sort of dissolved once the Affordable Care Act fully kicks in next year. And I just think that that's a very new trend, consumer-owned insurance, such as it were, and I'm not sure that we really have explored everything that that means yet.
Angela, what about you?
I'm going to go with a kind of off-the-beaten-path story. You know, there are the string of sexual assaults in East Lansing, three that we know about, and, you know, there are a lot of unresolved questions. We know that someone's out there, attacking women, and it's happening in a pretty contained area of the city. But there's a lot of reporting to be done on whether there are any other prior incidents of this happening, whether it's, what do you do? It's kind of a big deal for there to be a serial sex assaulter on the loose in a city. And time and again, when things like this happen, we don't really, I think, get the coverage it merits.
There was a pretty detailed drawing of the suspect, I guess, that they're
Correct,
looking for
yeah.
in the paper the other day. May was quite a month for the insurance industry in Lansing and East Lansing as well. Elaine referred to the to the Consumers Mutual situation, but Jackson National Life was a big part of this as well. It announced it wants to expand in Aladdin Township and hire another 1,000 people. Can we add Jackson National to this discussion as well, Elaine? What do you take away from that company's success?
Well, I think that's a huge indicator of the kind of turnaround in the local economy, that they could certainly expand any place that they want to. When you're talking about putting 1,000 jobs, you could go anywhere with that and probably get incentives from, you know, communities anywhere in the country. And they decided to do it here, and I think that that's a really positive sign for the community. And they are such a community-focused company as well. I mean, they encourage their employees to be out and involved in things and donating their time and volunteering. And, you know, I mean, they're really a good corporate citizen for this community. And I think it's very positive that they did that.
Angela, anything to add?
I think what's also important, you know, is this is a different kind of expansion from what we see in a different type of economic announcement. Usually we, you know, there's a big splash, there's a promise of jobs, et cetera, and whether it happens is sort of a toss-up. With Jackson National Life, you know, they've got a track record of growth. They grow quietly. They don't make a big deal out of it. So they've been adding, you know, 150, 200 jobs a year for the past few years. I think there's little doubt that their expansion is necessary. They're basically bursting at the seams in their present location. And they, you know, as Elaine said, they're a fairly well-known corporate citizen. They do a lot in the community. And, you know, it's fabulous, the prospect of 1,000 jobs in the next few years.
Do either of you give any thought to the generosity, let's say, involved in the tax incentives that become part of these deals? Either with GM, I mean, we have a hard time resisting the opportunity to hire more people.
Right.
Are the incentives in sync with the payoffs to the community there? It's hard to resist 1,000 new jobs.
Well, it's a little bit different in the case of Jackson. I mean, this is it's not technically in the city of Lansing, so one of the incentives allows the 425 allows Lansing to recoup some of that tax revenue that's generated in exchange for offering other incentives that help offset costs. That's a lot different than, you know, say like the incentives that the city approved for the casino. You know, you can make a case that, you know, what they're doing for Jackson allows more economic flexibility, whereas what happens with projects like the casino, you know, a lot of people criticize as padding the profit line for the developers. I think Jackson's a completely different example of how economic incentives are being used.
Elaine, anything to add to that?
I think that when you're doing things that help major employers that have a long-term commitment in the community to expand in the community, that is very much a different kind of investment than when you're kind of gambling, if you will, mm-hmm. whether it's a casino or somebody else on, you know, on a new business coming in and offering them a lot of tax breaks and other support to get them here without really any proven track record or any idea of how many of the, you know, how successful they'll really be, how many jobs they'll really give you. So I would tend to agree that, you know, when GM needs a tax break, we should probably take a pretty hard look at that. And if, you know, a company like Jackson National or one of the other major employers in town wants to talk about that, I think it's worth talking about.
Okay. We want to thank both of you for joining us on our Month in Review segment. It was really good. Elaine Kohanic of LSJ Media, Angela Whitrock, late of M Live and soon of Ingham County. We will miss you, and we wish you the best of luck. I have a jar of Miggy's salsa in my office for you.
Kidding?
She's the world's biggest Miguel Cabrera fan, so that is awaiting you.
Thank
Thanks
you.
To both of you.